All right, Kevin Barker. So the Jays were last at 500 on April 29th when they were 15-15. By my count, this was the fourth time since then that they had a chance to go to 500. And, well, they lose 7-3 to the Boston Red Sox tonight. They are 0-4 in the search for 500. And as we've said, before you plan anything or look ahead, I think getting to 500 is probably a good start. The numbers, as always, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. So, Kevin Barker, where do you want to start tonight? Much discussion before the game, of course, about John Schneider's lineup. John Schneider electing to go with Justin Turner and George Springer in the lineup, leaving Spencer Horwitz and Addison Barger out of the lineup, two left-handed bats against Nick Pivetta. John Schneider saying he wanted to go because of the experience factor against Pivetta. I mean, it certainly worked in the case of Justin Turner. He had himself a good offensive performance tonight. George Springer, well, we've seen that before from George Springer, to say the least. But, Kevin, I guess we'll start our discussion. Four home runs given up in three innings by Yusei Kikuchi. It's kind of the way he runs into trouble, isn't it? Just missing location with his pitches.
Yeah, I think so. I think the missed spots from the fastball, right? The velocity on the fastball is pretty consistent. I mean, when he's throwing that hard, you know, if he just has a consistent release point with the secondary stuff, normally he's on point and he can give you, you know, a decent start and at least give that lineup a chance. But, you know, it looked to me like he was aiming the secondary stuff a little bit too much, the changeup against certain guys like the O'Neill homer, the second one off the changeup that was up and away. It looked like he was more aiming that instead of, you know, basically that's a grip it and rip it pitch, right? I want to just grip it, set the lane, and have a good release point. You have that, you know, most of the time because of how hard you throw, and most lefties you see don't throw that hard. You usually get people out. O'Neill coming in tonight is hitting 320 off left and slugging 600. So you knew you had to make really good pitches no matter what the count was. You know, and if you didn't, because he looked very comfortable and was getting to a consistent finish against those lefties, that he might be hard to get out. So, you know, it's sort of like what Kevin said, you know, after the game. It was basically if the rotation is not coming out and dominating and at least letting that lineup have a chance to have the big inning, most of the time they lose. And, you know, it was a little bit of that situation. Some of the at-bats, Jeff, you got to be honest, were better, right? I mean, the Schneider hanging sweeper, I mean, he should hit that thing out 10 times out of 10. You mentioned Turner, right? It just looked to me like it was freer and easier. He wasn't trying to force getting to the location with the barrel. I don't know why that is. I mean, his swing looks sort of the same way. Maybe he's getting started a little sooner. And Ernie Clement, look, he just looks like he's going out there and you know, is getting soft toss in a batting cage. I mean, it'd be hard-pressed to say that John Schneider's not going to continue to run him out there. So, you know, you had some at-bats that were kind of nice to watch, but it is just those big-time innings, right? It's like that second inning where they're trying to do some things, and KK comes up and strikes out, and, you know, Davis Schneider, and you know, they're trying double steal, which I like that move. That's what you have to do, right? Coming in, I think Davis Schneider was hitting somewhere in the 167 range in June. Like, he'd had some ups and downs in June. You tried to push the envelope, put pressure on a bad defense. You know, I would like to see Ernie get a little bit bigger lead. You know, it's not so much a jump. It's more of a lead for me, especially when you're the trail runner. Most of the time they're paying attention to the lead runner, not the trail guy. But, you know, it is what it is. This is sort of rinse and repeat, right? It's hopefully they have a good start. Hopefully the offense has a big inning. If they don't, you know, even against the Red Sox, most of the time you're going to lose those games.
Yeah, the Jays did get home runs from Justin Turner and Davis Schneider. But you are right. There are a couple of crucial at-bats in that game. Kevin Kiermaier striking out with in the second inning, and frankly Ernie Clement as well. Now he had runners on the corners when he came up and flew out to center field. But I mean, not to take anything away from what Ernie Clement did tonight, because you know, he was
he's not a run producer, Jeff.
Exactly, he's not a run producer. He's a bit of a table setter.
Absolutely.
Such as it is. And Kevin Kiermaier hit into another double play in the seventh inning as well. Nick Pivetta, we did a lot of talk before the game, talked to Jonathan Papelbon. Lots of talk about how the Red Sox are approaching pitching this year, their philosophy that seems to rely less on fastballs and more on spin. What did you make of Nick Pivetta tonight? Anything surprising, anything you read into what his pitch selection was against the Blue Jays? We talked about Logan Allen the other night. What was it, 52 of 84 pitches? 91-92 mile an hour fastball, showing no respect to the Blue Jays hitters. You read anything into what you saw from Nick Pivetta tonight?
Yeah, I think Nick Pivetta's a fastball up because of the spin is deceptive, right? I mean, it's 93-94. It's not like he's throwing 99 to 100. I just think that sort of sneaky gets on hitters. You know, you got to be ready to hit. Then he feeds sort of the sweeper off of that. I don't really get the cutter. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. You know, I think he'd be more apt to throw the slider a little bit more than the cutter, but I get the gist. He's trying to take the sting out of the barrel. You know, his bread and butter seems to be the elevated four seamer and the sweeper. And, you know, it's just the swing decisions for the Jays, very sloppy, Jeff. Like, it's, you know, some at bats it's on point and it looks like, you know, they sort of have the exact right plan and they're executing it. And then there's other times where they go up and it looks just the opposite of that. So, you know, it's very hard, Jeff, to come on here and go, was it Nick or was it the lineup?
Yeah.
It's very hard.
It's always the lineup to be honest.
Yeah, well, like it's just, that, like I said, those swing decisions. And we've had John on our show a bazillion times. And when I ask him a question about a certain hitter, he always leads with swing decisions. Like it's – this deep in the season ain't mechanics anymore. It's about what you don't swing at, right? If I ain't chasing the pitcher's pitch, allow him to throw me one down the middle, probably good things are going to happen. If I don't allow him to do that, then it's sort of going to turn into looking the way it's been looking. So, yeah, it's very hard. Like, I wish I could give you a better answer, but he had a good sweeper. He had a sneaky heater at the top of the zone. It did the job.
Ken, let's talk a little bit about the Red Sox lineup. Much discussion, of course, coming into tonight's game. They stole 9 of 10 bases against the New York Yankees. You know, we know this is a lineup. It's kind of been pieced together right now. They're without three key contributors. Got some young guys. We've got some veteran guys. You've got guys like Rob Refsnyder who are just filling in roles. But, you know, you watch the way they go about their business. And you really see why they are, like, the three games over 500 isn't a great deal, although, quite frankly, in the American League, this day, it gets you pretty damn close to a wild card spot. But you kind of get the sense of how they have beaten some good teams lately, don't you, when you watch them, the way they attack pitchers and just their approach.
Yeah,
there's an athleticism in almost everything they do.
Yeah, well, they can hit velocity. You can tell that, right? They got a couple of behemoths in the middle of the order and O'Neill and Devers who can, you know, get the scoreboard headed in the right direction for their team because of what they can do with hitting the ball in the seats. They have speed if they need that. I mean, it was 5-1 through four innings, right? You didn't think the running game was going to be a big factor after that, right? It's the close games when you get the fast dudes on. That's the way they can create havoc and put pressure on a catcher and a pitcher to sort of try and control that right slide step and holding the ball a little longer. Most pitchers aren't good at that. So, yeah, look, if I'd have told you, Jeff, at the beginning of the season when me and you were talking about, you know, the division and everybody was picking the Red Sox to be in last place, if June 17th they were three games above 500, you'd call me nuts. You'd say you were smoking that good stuff, buddy. But – this is sort of what it is, right? They bought into an approach with their pitching staff, with the spinning it thing and the throwing the fastballs at the right time and in the right location. It's not so much about the velocity as it is about the location. And then you got those two dudes in the middle of the order, and they're sort of, you know, hiding the defensive woes by the way they can steal bases. And they got a real savvy manager. Like, you could just tell he's got everything figured out before it actually happens. And you could tell they got a lot of confidence. When he is walking or talking, everybody you can tell on that team is not doing anything but watching what he's doing, and that'll just tell you he's got control of everything, and they sort of are headed in the right direction. That's why me and you got that little mini argument today on our show, and I said they need to go out and do something. I mean, at least gain some momentum going into the next season, because the team looks decent. Like, they got some pieces here that they could add to and gain a little confidence and learn how to win at the big league level. That's what it's all about. Sometimes you need that veteran presence to sort of show you how to do it, to add to the O'Neills and the Devers of the world. So maybe we'll see that. Who knows?
416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. It's the first of three games between the Jays and the Red Sox at the Rogers Center. Boston winning 7-3. Daryl in Cambridge, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Kevin. How are you guys tonight?
Good, thanks.
Doing well?
Good. I'm getting a little bit sick of stupid managerial decisions. Every time you seem to get on a little bit of a winning streak, they win two games in a row. I was at the game yesterday. Barger and Horowitz are playing great, and then I was like, oh, you know what? We're going to sit them out the next game. They need a break. They're young. Keep Springer out of the lineup, for Pete's sake, and keep Kirk out of the lineup. And start playing guys that are actually getting on base and doing something, not like Mendoza line guys. It's brutal. It's hard to watch.
Yeah, Daryl, I appreciate the call. I cannot disagree with that. Justin Turner obviously worked out tonight. We've talked about George Springer ad nauseum, and I mean, he's making a lot of money. He's here for another couple of years. That shouldn't matter as far as I'm concerned, but clearly it matters to somebody. Because and we spend a lot of time talking about George Springer, but I've also got to say this: Kevin Kiermaier is not doing much for me offensively either.
Now, he's not hitting the fastball.
Great defenders, both of them great defenders, but they're at that stages of their careers where this probably isn't a fluke. This is probably telling you a little bit about both of those guys, about where they are in their careers, and I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how John Schneider plays this. We've gone back and forth about this on our show. We've talked to other people about it. Short of benching George Springer, I don't know what you do. I hit him ninth. Again, he's giving you he's giving you defense. But, yeah, it's his at-bats are a tough, tough watch. They really are a tough watch. And I'm getting the impression that he thinks they're a tough watch, too, watching his reaction to some things, which is never a good sign.
Yeah, Jeff, it's not easy to feel that way at the plate. I felt that way. Like, I was, didn't get the opportunities to get myself out of it like he's doing at the big league level. I was in AAA or AA. But, yeah, look, I just don't know the right answer to that. I mean, we've had this conversation till we're blue in the face. I know what I'd do. I mean, I wouldn't play him every day. That would be the gist of this thing, right? Maybe that would be better for him. Like, maybe his at-bats would get better. Maybe it would be, a mental ease of just not having to worry about showing up every day and trying to figure out how to contribute offensively. I guess you can give him credit for the way he plays defense, because he's not carrying his offense to the defensive side. But, I mean, I – don't you think, Jeff, if they're ever going to get to 500, maybe they have to do it with not George playing every single day? I mean, I would think that's sort of where we're at now, right?
I mean, at this stage, in a lot of ways, there's a little bit of opportunity here, too, because, again, it doesn't look like that wild card spot's running away from them. And, yes, it is. I mean, God almighty, it's June 17th, and we're talking about the wild card. I feel like slapping myself in the face. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the way the league looks so far, it's not as if it's running away from them. It's not as if it's necessarily getting away from them. So what the hell? Let's see Horowitz and Barger. Why not? If it doesn't work, you can change course then. But I'll tell you what, I'd rather see that, and I guarantee you, I absolutely guarantee you, fans would rather see that than George Springer and Kevin Kiermaier. They just would.
Yeah, I think they got to figure out how to not go 6-4. I mean, 6-4 is not, 4-6, but I think they got to figure out a way to go like 9-1, or, at the very least 8-2. Do you think you can do it with the Turners and the Springers and the Kiermaiers in the lineup at the same time? I just think that might be a tough thing to do.
That's a 30-year lineup. Yeah, it's a 30-year lineup.
Yeah.
That is really – it's a third of your lineup that's underperforming, you know, coupled with the issues we've talked about with Bo Bichette. I mean, so basically you're talking about – and if you want to throw the catchers in when Kirky's in there, you're talking about a half your lineup. I don't care who the hell the manager is. You're not going to win with that. You're just not. Let's go to Ryan in Innisfil. You're on Blue Jays Talk.
How we doing, fellas?
Well, you know, rinse and repeat, my friend. Rinse and repeat.
No, exactly. I have 2 points today. The first one I want to bring up is kind of about Tim Mesa. It's hurting me right now to see what Tim Mesa is and what he's becoming. I don't think that this is the Tim Mesa that it is. As you guys were saying last week, like maybe there's an injury or something like that. I don't know how many options he has left on his contract, but I feel like he should be sent down to AAA and we should try some of the other garbage we have down there just in the meantime while he gets his stuff together a little bit. You know what I mean? It's not fair to him to keep running him out there and just destroy his confidence, you know? Just let him go build it back up in AAA and let him get healthy again. And then second, this team hasn't looked that bad without Bo Bichette, like, at all. At all. And I really wouldn't mind seeing him go and just giving Vladdy the money that he deserves. I love Bo. Don't call me a Bo hater again. You called me that last time. I love Bo. He's awesome. But I think it's time to move on from that guy. Thank you, boys.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, Tim Mesa, thank you for mentioning that because we were about to go there next too, Kevin. Look, tonight, obviously they're shorthanded. Well, not shorthanded, but they put Jimmy Garcia in the IL. They had Brandon Isert up here. We've talked about how guys are going to have to step up and change roles and assume more of a load, considering that closer one and closer 1A are not available. I think you hit the nail on the head about Tim Mesa a while ago. I just don't think that stuff plays anymore. I mean, people have seen too much of it. I mean, he's pitched a lot, and I'm not by any stretch am I taking anything away from Tim Mesa. They hand him the ball. He goes out and pitches. And I think he gives you whatever he's gotten that day. I don't think he's hurt. Yeah. I think this organization, frankly, I think this pitching coach and manager have way too much respect for Tim Mesa to send him out there hurt.
Absolutely.
It's just not work. It's not working anymore. He's throwing a lot of – he's not an overpowering guy. He's throwing a lot of pitches over the course of the past 3 years. He's throwing a lot of innings. Everybody's seen a lot of his stuff. Everybody in this division's seen him repeatedly. But, you know, tonight I think you almost – I don't know where else he would have gone. Maybe Hennessy's Cabrera instead, but, I mean, I don't
– I mean, it sounds like Cabrera's getting it more when they're closer to taking the
lead.
Not when they're as behind as they were when Tim came in. Right? It's we talk about the velocity with Tim Mesa, right, how important at least the sort of the mile and a half more added to his sinker, which would allow him to get away with some stinker sliders. Now that, you know, he's sort of throwing more 91s than 94s and the sinker's elevated, that's why you see it starting to get hammered and he's trying to choke the slider off a little bit more because he knows he's not throwing as hard, so he wants it to spin and break better. That's why they're more non-competitive. So you see sort of more hitters counts. You see the sinker up. When the sinker's up with hitters counts with a guy that don't throw as hard or hard enough, you sort of see what the outcome is. So, yeah, I don't even know, right, if he's sort of the service time is that he has. I don't even know if he could send him down. So, again, this is sort of one of those things where, you know, the betterment of the team – what do you do? Like, I think they're running out of situations to bring him into. That's the thing, right? There's not too many games they can run him out there against the Red Sox when they're only losing by, you know, three or four runs. You still got an opportunity, even though it was in the sixth inning. So,
Those two runs, look, I mean, that ninth inning is a lot different if it's 5-3 compared to 7-3. I'm not saying it turns out any different, but there's a different tenor to it. Suddenly, first of all, you're probably seeing Kenley Jansen in to start the inning to begin with, but 5-3, you got your chances. You know, 5-3, you got a chance. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe you start to take some guys off the bench at that point. I mean, again, those two runs really kind of sucked the life out, because it looked for a while like the Jays were going to kind of hang around and pick away at things, but then you get two runs in the seventh inning, yeah. And it's 7-2,
yeah,
and at that point, five runs is a lot for these guys to overcome.
Jeff,
it really is.
It's a little bit. It's like the body language too. You talked about George Springer, right? Whenever he's getting out, and the sort of the expectation of the look that he's going to get out before he actually walks to the plate. I mean, Tim Mesa all the time doesn't look like, you know, he's a ball of energy and running around the mound, but he really doesn't look like this sort of Tim Mesa, right? And I think body language is a big deal. I know when I played, that was huge. I used to be told all the time by teammates, you know, your body language tells a lot of who's running the team, a lot about how you're doing. So, you know, again, it's just sometimes you got to make tough decisions. And I would think sooner than later, because, you know, Tim's been a big deal for this organization for a very, very long time. So you don't want to disrespect that. But you also have to think about the team and think about the manager and how you're supposed to use certain guys. And now you don't have your key arms at the back end. You don't want to be forced to use a guy because you ain't got nobody else. So this is where, as a manager and a GM, you got to get together and figure out what you're going to do. And you know, again, this gets back to that Kevin Gausman comment. The pitching basically is going to take this team where they're ultimately going to end up. And you got to have every guy raring and ready to go when John hands the ball to him. And raise your hand if you think right now Tim Mays is the guy you want to hand the ball to.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm with you completely. As far as the Bo Bichette element of that question, I mean, I've said this, I've written this. My feeling is they will probably hang on to them through the year, take one more run at signing them, or at least try to figure out which of the two they can sign, and then maybe in the offseason move on from the other guy. I just, looking at attendance and some of the other things at work here, I just don't know. I don't know how this fan base would take moving one of those two, because to me, that would. I think fans would see that as punting on the season. And I just don't know if you can do that in this market. I really don't. And we've talked about this. You've made your point, and you are right. If you trade one of the two at this trade deadline, you're going to get more than you would get if you waited until the offseason, because the acquiring team is getting the guy for two postseason runs. Or if you want to look at another way, the acquiring team is also given extra time to try to figure out whether they can work out a long-term deal with the team. Maybe a team like, a team like L.A. trades for Bo. Bo goes off. Maybe L.A. says, shoot, let's sign this guy. Let's sit down and sign this guy. So there's an aspect of that, but it doesn't feel like that is probable right now. It just doesn't, you know, and maybe during the trade deadline, it'll feel a little different, or maybe, quite frankly, Kevin, it could just be that I just have a hard time imagining this team without both Bo and Vladdy in the lineup. And, you know, again, it'd be sad if this organization isn't able to take advantage of having these two guys. To me, as a baseball fan, as someone who's followed this team, that's sad.
Yeah, it's almost like you're adding on to wasting a really good rotation.
Yep.
That's sort of the way. You know, I think you got to, if you're the GM and the president, you got to go to both and see who wants to stay here. Like, I think that's where you start. And if one of them.
Surely you would know. Surely they would know by now.
Maybe. I have no idea. Like, I'm not even going to act like I would know the answer.
No,
to that.
I wouldn't either.
But I would think that's the first thing you would have to figure out. And if you find out before the trade deadline that one of the two, you know, is not really wanting to stay here, then you trade him. Like, you pull that Band-Aid off as fast as you can pull it. You get what you can get for him. And then maybe you turn around and sign the one that wants to stay here. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how you would make fans happy, is you trade one, you get some really good pieces for him, and then you turn right back around and you sign the other one long-term, and you come out and tell everybody, you know, we're not blowing this thing up. We're just sort of, you know, we're rebooting and trying to figure out what the future looks like.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. It is Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker. 7-3, the Jays have lost to the Boston Red Sox. We'll take a break and come back and hear from the skipper, John Schneider. It's Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I think just talking it through with our training staff and with Jimmy, you know, and kind of making the best decision for him. You know, we were thrilled to get the results back from the MRI with nothing structural. But I think in looking at it and then what it kind of the domino effect of what it would have on other guys too. So you're trying to kind of piece together what's best for him, what's best for us. You know, so I think we're looking at best case. It's probably, you know, at least 6 days or so that we're kind of be working around that if he was good. And then you're hoping that everything goes perfectly, you know, up until that point. So he's so important to us that I think we kind of just err on the side of making sure that it was right. And hopefully it's, you know, a minimal stint for him.
That is John Schneider talking about Jimmy Garcia, who is on the IL with an ulnar nerve irritation. You heard the skipper say originally there was some thought that he might not need a stint on the IL. But, Kevin, given how short-staffed this bullpen is right now, if it's a matter of kind of monitoring a guy for 6 days, I mean, the Jays, they just can't do that right now without Jordan Romano. They just can't do that.
It's terrible timing with who they're playing, the Red Sox, you know, what, five more times in the next week. You know, you would like to have had your best ninth inning guy in the ninth inning. You could fill in the blanks everywhere else. You know, that would maybe allow you to hide certain guys you didn't want to pitch. But, you know, now it's go time. Again, I said this on our show today. I mean, I know we've said this a ton, but how do they score runs? If they score more runs, like, it would make it way easier just to deal with what they don't have in the ninth inning. But when you don't score runs,
you don't really have much of a comfort zone.
You don't have words,
to say the least. Well, I'm glad you said that. I'll play along. 7-3, the Blue Jays have lost to the Boston Red Sox. The Jays are 35-37. 7:07, first pitch tomorrow as Tanner Houck takes on Chris Bassett. Tanner Houck's been awfully good. He will be, I think it's safe to say, unless he gets hurt, on the American League All-Star team. Hell, I don't know. I mean, he might be in the picture to start. Some people are saying that. But
sure.
The Red Sox, as we've talked about, not many people fancied them coming into the year. I don't think I was the only one that thought they'd finish in last place. And, again, only three games over 500. But, you know, they're a handful. You know, they've beaten the Phillies and they've beaten the Yankees in back-to-back series. And those are hard gets. And that's I mean, in the case of the Yankees,
yeah,
that's a really hard get.
Well, they may have found a blueprint, right, with the spinning at first sort of attitude and the running game that they have. I mean, that's two lethal combinations that seem to be working.
Just very quickly before we scoot, Tyler O'Neill, obviously, Canadian, Maple Ridge, B.C. You pointed out he's hit a ton of home runs, doesn't have many RBIs. Kevin, just your thoughts on him as a hitter, because we've seen him now for a little bit. We saw him when he was in St. Louis, but we've seen him now here, and we've seen him on TV a little bit as well. Your thoughts on him as a hitter? Does he interest you?
Well, what are you saying? He'd look good in the Jays uni?
Well, I mean, you'd look good in the Jays uni right now.
He's a big dude. That's the first thing I noticed. Usually big dudes, you know, just are not as limber as he is, right? And that would sort of it would look very robotic, right? His swing would be like, you know, step first, swing now. Like, it doesn't look that way. Like, it's fast through the zone. It's got a, you know, he gets to his finish like in a hurry. It's like to it and through it. And, you know, he's got tremendous power to the pull side. So, yeah, you know, like I like him being able to hit velocity the way he does. I like that he destroys lefties, which is a big deal. And I like it that he can hit in the middle of the order and protect Devers. Those are all kind of nice things to pay attention to.
The Blue Jays have lost 7-3 to the Boston Red Sox. They'll do it again tomorrow night, 7:07 first pitch. A reminder, Blair and Barker will be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet from 4 to 6 Eastern tomorrow afternoon. And we will be back tomorrow night as well with hopefully a winning edition of Blue Jays Talk. So thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Niagara Falls and St. Catharines. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection.